From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready. I am manning the controls of the mobile Clark Ford studio. Neil is in Atlanta, the Rivals.com publisher convention, and then subsequent five-star challenge this week in Atlanta. So from a hotel room somewhere, Neil McCready joins me on the show this morning, a show brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Get the Speed Pass Plus. Download it to your phone. Head on over to an Exxon station that's a credit oil station and save some money on your fuel. You also get to just use the app. Don't have to worry about doing anything else. It is more convenient. It is more efficient. And you don't have to worry about the identity theft, credit card skimmers, and other things that can hit you at gas stations, but not credit oil stations in Mississippi with Speed Pass Plus. Also, the YGB football camp at Jackson Academy Thursday and Friday. You can check out ygbfootball.org for more information. If you have a child in high school, in elementary school, in junior high, it's all about learning. It's not about scouting. It's about learning and coaching with them. A lot of former Ole Miss players, Jordan Wilkins, Dante Moncrief, Evan Ingram, Mike Hilton, among the counselors for that camp. So find out more end of this week, Thursday and Friday, at Jackson Academy. And again, Neil can tell you a little bit more about Clark Ford.
Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. Call 662-257-1900. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and then it gets easy from there. He's going to send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. Ask for a couple quotes if you'd like. You can do that too. You get your quote. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. There's no hassle. You take your quote and decide what you want to do with it, whether you want to shop it around, see if you can beat it elsewhere. Good luck. Or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford go ahead and take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's you get a great Ford product, great service after the sale. It's really tremendous service after the sale. And there's no hassle. It's just nice and easy. We'll make it even better. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on any of our family of podcasts. It's $500 off the already great bottom line at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Today, here in a little bit, we're going to talk with Patrick Oaks from the Biloxi Sun-Herald, but not talking Mississippi sports. He actually was my college roommate, as many of you know, one of my best friends to this day. He is a soccer guy. He interned for the Portland Timbers back in 2007, I believe. He was out in Portland while we were in school or at the end of school with the Beavers, the AAA team for, I think it's the time of the Padres. I don't know who it is now. And then the Timbers. He went to an Atlanta United game over the weekend. We've talked about MLS in the Southeast. It's been a topic that the message board has had a lot of discussion on. We've hit on it some on the podcast. So June, a good time to get his thoughts as he watched a 1-1 tie between the Portland Timbers and Atlanta United on, I guess, Saturday, Sunday, one of those days. He went to a Braves game, too. But we're mostly going to talk a little MLS with him, kind of where he sees the sport going, and have a bit of a soccer podcast this morning. I kind of hate Neil wasn't around for it because, frankly, he sees a lot more of it than I did or I do. But we'll make it work best we can.
Well, I mean, it's one of these topics that people get worked up about. And I'm not a, quote, soccer guy. End quote. I've been joking around with Carson for years about how I need to pick a team in Europe or whatever. And the truth is, I don't know enough about him to pick a team. And so the other day, he and I are watching England and somebody. And the Harry Kane, who plays for probably the star of the English team, and he plays for Tottenham Hotspur, had a couple of goals. And so I'm joking around about how I'm going to be a Tottenham fan. And anyway, my point is someone made how many kids could name European players. So I asked Carson, who's just an 11-year-old boy, how many European players can you name? And he started naming them. And I didn't keep count, but it took 10 minutes. And how much of that is based on him playing FIFA on the PlayStation? I don't know. how much of that is him getting up on Saturday and watching the English Premier League. I don't know. He streams that La Liga or whatever. I don't know. He watches a lot. He was all fired up the other day because the Cubs ownership is trying to buy FC Milan, which I guess is part of La Liga. I'm not sure. And then I said, well, do you know any players on FC Milan? And he started naming players on FC Milan. I don't think he's in the vast minority as it pertains to kids his age around the country. I was listening to Bob Nightingale yesterday on ESPN Radio as I was getting into Atlanta. I was just trying to have something to distract me from basically getting tired. And Bob Nightingale's a national baseball writer for, I want to say USA Today.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, I don't know who he's with now. I'm a baseball guy. I love professional baseball. I can sit and watch a professional baseball game from the first pitch to the last pitch and be completely entertained. I am in the vast minority. And basically, people would look at me and go, well, you're an old man. He was talking about how baseball is absolutely professional baseball. From talking, this is about as spectators, as fans. And let's get real here. The overwhelming majority of all of us and our offspring are not playing professional sports of any sort. We're all going to be spectators. Baseball's losing them and losing them fast and struggling with ways to come up with ways to keep them. Baseball attendance is down. Only four of the, 30 Major League Baseball teams, only four of the 30 Major League Baseball teams are seeing an increase in attendance. Half are seeing a decrease in attendance. Attendance is down more than 7% around baseball. Some of that is tanking, obviously. Tampa, Pittsburgh, some of the organizations that are seeing massive fall-offs in attendance. Some of that is an inability to get young people. I can't remember who was talking about it yesterday, but they had gone to speak to some kids and talk high school kids about watching a baseball game from start to finish. And those kids, he said it was as if he told them he was putting them in jail. They baseball's got a problem from a retention standpoint. And then along these lines, I mean, if you ask young people, pretty much anywhere, to name professional baseball players and then name professional soccer players, they're going to name more soccer players. It's a growing sport. I think soccer's growing. I've been to some MLS games. If I'm honest, the first one I went to was pretty bad. The second one I went to a year later was a lot better. The quality of play was better. MLS still has a long way to go, obviously, to catch up with the top European leagues, but I was in Cincinnati over the weekend. I told you this, and we were at a restaurant where in the bar they had England Sweden and somebody.
Germany, right?
Yeah, I think that's right, because Germany won in the extra minutes, the stoppage play. With a goal on a penalty kick that was incredible. It was a 2-1 game. Germany beat Sweden. And that place was about – that game ended about 20 minutes before the Cubs and Reds had the first pitch. And that place was packed. And people were into that game. Germany and Sweden. I know it was World Cup. But usually in the past, the World Cup has been – hey, we're going to get excited about the Americans. This was Germany and Sweden, and it was packed. People were in there watching that. Every TV in the place was on that game. And I looked around, and the majority of the demographic, Chase, was 20s. People in their 20s. Maybe some early 30s, but mostly 20s. And some of the guys that were next to us, they were really nice. They were kind enough to entertain Carson a little bit. And three guys, they were all lived in the Cincinnati area, and they were going to the ball game later, but they were watching the World Cup. And they were talking about how the Cincinnati, I guess it's the United States Soccer League or something, whatever it's called. Stephen Willis is out there right now listening to this, correcting me as I speak. But whatever it is, the United States Soccer League or whatever, and they're going to Major League Soccer in 2020 or 2021 or something. And they're building a new stadium in Cincinnati for it. And the current team plays at University of Cincinnati, I think. And he said they're getting 20,000 people at a game there for, let's face it, bad soccer. And I said, well, what will MLS do here? He said, it'll do better than the Reds. And I was like, really? And he goes, oh, yeah. People are jacked up about it. And they're that way in Nashville. And they're already that way in Atlanta, as I know Patrick told you, and our listeners will hear in a minute. I just think when people discount the growth of soccer, it's a defense mechanism thing. It's an anger thing about what it's doing to football. I've said this for a long time. I think people talk about football and like it's going to die in 10 years. That's crap. It's not. But you do have to start watching youth football, high school football. Be honest with yourself. Ask yourself with your kids. If your kids play lacrosse, are you still donating to the high school football program, or are you donating to the high school lacrosse program? If your kids play soccer or baseball, are you still donating to the football program even though your kid doesn't play? The answer to that 99% of the time is no. And when the booster clubs at the high school level don't have the money to do some of the things in football that they've had to do in the past, when football doesn't produce the revenues at the high school level that maybe it did in the past, when football becomes a sport that is largely limited to one demographic, it's going to slowly become less of the king. Bob Nightingale was saying yesterday that, you know, about baseball, the NFL obviously is past Major League Baseball. He said the NBA is past Major League Baseball by any measurable metric. Soccer's that sport that's just kind of a nice slow growth. And people go, well, people said that 30 years ago. Okay, go back and look 30 years ago at where soccer was in the United States. And look today at where soccer is in the United States. And if you're honest about it, it's a precipitous growth. And I don't think there's anything slowing it down. It's just my opinion. I think young people, and when I talk about young people, I mean young people, Carson's age. Those people in 20 years, when they're 31 years old, he'll be 31 in 20 years. The sport that he's going to know the best, because he played it, because he's seen it, because you can now watch it on your computer, on your phone, frankly, is soccer. You can watch it all the time. You can see the European players. And as those European players trickle to the MLS for the money, I think they're going to become household names in that generation.
Yeah, it's fascinating that, you know, the group that has pushed this forward a little bit is a little younger than me, but mostly the younger part of my generation. And I told you this, I'm mostly intrigued by why, because I get it with Carson and them, they play. My group still didn't play. It's not a sport that was widely played, other than, frankly, and you know this because you probably still see this a little bit, hey, why don't you play soccer to stay in shape for the other sports? You know what I mean?
Right.
That kind of thing. That was more what our group did. So I'm fascinated just kind of how it's built that way. As Patrick mentioned several times that you'll hear, he thinks that Atlanta being pretty decent off the top is a huge part of what happened, because he thinks, well, if they were bad, it wouldn't be like this. They've gotten good, which allows that bandwagon to make it a little more popular and trendy, I think was the word he uses, to be a soccer person because of the success of the team early.
I think that's true. It's also more affordable.
Yeah. Well, and there are fewer games.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're trying to buy Falcons tickets, season tickets.
Yeah.
Chunk of change. If you buy United tickets, it's less of a chunk of change. And then when it becomes what soccer's been able to do at the MLS level in certain markets, Kansas City, Atlanta, Portland, Seattle,
obviously. Toronto.
Yeah, they've been able to make it an event. They've put a lot of things around it. They do a great job of marketing it. Even in Chicago, and the team there plays, it's kind of out in the burbs, sort of in like Brookfield or somewhere. It's like hard to get there. And
yeah, I looked it up yesterday. They're one of the lower attendance teams for whatever reason. I don't know why, but
yeah, and they're talking about building a stadium in River North, which is the north part of downtown, and they're right there, obviously, on the river. And people are saying, hey, if that happens, it'll become a major sport there. That the only reason it's not huge in Chicago, where you have all sorts of – with the Blackhawks and the Bulls and two Major League Baseball teams, the only reason it's not is because it's so hard to get there. When they alleviate that problem, it's going to take off. And I don't know. I'll leave that to people who know more about it than I do. There just appears to be a lot of optimism about the growth of that sport. And I told you this. I mean, Oxford, Mississippi, is that a normal town to judge? I have no idea. But go out to FNC Park. Pick any weekend in the fall, in the spring. Soccer fields, man, and the baseball fields too. Packed. Packed. Teams from Illinois and Missouri and Kentucky and Alabama and Mississippi and obviously Tennessee, Louisiana, that are in Memphis for weekends of soccer. Now, are those kids going to go on and play college soccer? Most of them aren't, certainly. But a lot of those kids are going to play a lot of soccer, and they like the sport. And, I mean, a lot of them are still going to – I think one of the reasons people get vehement about it is they think it's an either-or thing that you can – you have to pick a sport to cheer for. And obviously, that's baloney. I just think it's becoming one of the big sports.
See, that's what I was about to say. That's probably the most frustrating part of this. And obviously, I understand it's one of the things that we've built podcast arguments on over the years is there is only a certain amount of discretionary income. But in saying that, it doesn't have to replace something. It can just become another thing. I mean, it seems like every time we have this conversation, not you and I, but just in general in America, we have this conversation, it's, well, what is it going to completely obliterate? Well, nothing, but that's not really the point. It can just be another thing.
Absolutely. And like I've said, I think football's a slow bleed.
Well, here's the thing with football, too, is it makes billions and billions and billions of dollars. And yes, at its current level of safety issues, concussions, frankly, parental fear, all these things, they have a problem. When something makes that much money, typically they figure the problem out. My gut tells me that maybe it's not the same game exactly, but football figures things out before they lose billions and billions of dollars over the next three decades.
It's my guess. It's what I think, too. I mean, I think they've kind of got a And maybe I think they, to some degree, already have.
Yeah, they're starting the process. But now they're going to have a PR battle on their hands from a parental fear standpoint.
Yes, football for the longest time put its head in the sand.
Yeah, I think it's out of the sand, but it's still shoulders deep and can't move.
Yeah, it was very macho. You can't be that way. I mean, that's not in this culture. You've got to address your problem. And they're starting to. I mean, they were sort of forced to. The concussion movie,
yeah,
had a huge impact on people as the Junior Seau type stories come out. Those have tremendous impacts on people. Football has to change the way the game is taught at the youth level.
And they appear to be doing that.
And they're working at it. Yeah, that's an undertaking, and that's where it's going to start. If you want to, quote, save football, and I don't think football is to a point yet where it has to be, quote, saved, but if you want to stop the bleeding, and I do think there's bleeding in football, I don't think there's any question about it. People will argue that. Look around the country, attendance is down. Ratings are down, attendance is down. If they want to stop that, they're going to have to do it at the youth level. Yeah. That's where it has to start, at the youth level. At the junior high level, at the high school level, you have to change the way the game is taught. And, you know, you see people talking about taking kickoffs out and stuff like that. I don't think there's any question that's coming. I think college football, as much as we hate the targeting rule, as much as we hate the way the targeting, not that, I'll rephrase, let me rephrase that. As much as we hate the way that the targeting rule is enforced.
Right.
I do think the presence of the targeting rule has changed the game in a positive way.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. So
I think it's taken away some of the, it's taught guys that, hey, if you go headhunting, it's a decent chance that you're going to get kicked out of a game in the first quarter, or you're not going to get to play the first half next week, and that's going to impact your team. It has eliminated a lot of that, which I think was the point. The NFL hasn't gone to that place yet. Probably needs to, because now, when I was a kid and you saw those hits where a guy got just laid out, those were the hits everybody celebrated. And now when you see a guy just get laid out, typically the guy that delivered the hit, you don't think fondly of what he did. You no longer think, well, man, that's football, man. You know, go across the middle, we're going to take you out. No one thinks like that really anymore. That part of the game has changed, and I think that's a major positive for football. They have to eliminate that kind of thing, because that's the kind of thing that people see it and they say, I don't want my kid playing that game.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, as we kind of move on here, that – and it's football's thing. They're going to have to figure out, even as this thing progresses and they do continue to help the safety things, is while, look, it's nowhere near apples to apples, a lot of parents go, hey, I'm looking at that, and that could happen to my freshman in high school. And, look, the game's completely different, but that is at least the association that is being made, right or wrong. You know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely. I mean –
Yeah, I mean, I'm not advocating or not advocating for 8-year-old tackle football, but they're not having those type of collisions, obviously. But that's what they see, so it gets implemented into everybody's head.
I agree. And so, I think a lot of the youth league tackle football is just silly. I listen to Archie Manning and those type people who say play flag until junior high.
Probably have a beat on what they're talking about, I guess. So
I'm gonna guess that. They probably have a clue.
Yeah.
All right. But but like you're saying, I don't, but the, if you're going to coach youth league football, that's the place where you teach proper tackling skills. When I hear youth league football stories about doing the bull in the ring stuff in youth league, where it's just see who can be the toughest, I think, yeah, that's the problem. You have to get away from some of that. You have to teach technique, teach skill. Stuff like that. In my opinion, at least. But you can almost hear some of the, especially probably older listeners getting angry about it. You have to change the way the game's taught.
Yeah.
I did stuff in high school that we did, you know, drills and stuff that are, hey, let's see who can be the toughest. And that's all well and good. I think with young people, it's about teaching the game the right way.
And things that will be taught that way at Jackson Academy with the YGB football on Thursday and Friday. So as we go to Patrick in a second, first tell you the podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting and understand your market, a leader in condo financing, and the float down option. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLO, JLOWE, at communitymtg.com.
Speaking of football, the season is approaching. Ole Miss opens its home slate September the 8th against Southern Illinois. It's the first of 7 home games at Vaught-Hemingway. If you're coming up to tailgate this year, hanging out in the Grove, whether it's one time or for all the league games or for all the games or anything in between, get in touch with 7 South Tailgating. They're celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try 7 South once. You'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South will set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail. It's 7south.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering 1-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield and 3-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on OM Year of the Fan and updated often. It's omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. And the podcast is brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. You can go to the Properties and Neighborhoods tab at the top left, filter through by what you are looking for. The results are that you get are updated daily, so what you see as being on the market is what's actually on the market. And then let Harry take it from there. Send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com.
Now Patrick Oakes on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Patrick, you are back on the Mississippi Gulf Coast after a trip to Atlanta. Took the 1 year old with you. How was the trip from the standpoint of having to take a toddler all the way over there?
You know, to be honest, the drive there and back actually wasn't too bad. It's about maybe 7 hours, I guess. And thankfully, the Wiggles got us through about half the drive, and she slept the other half because we left about 5 o'clock each morning, trying to ensure some sleep time. So. The drive itself wasn't too bad. Now, I only saw maybe about 8 pitches at the Braves game because we were trying to walk her around in the concourse, trying to keep her entertained. Unfortunately, the concession stands only kept her entertained for maybe half an inning. Outside of that, it was pretty good. We went with my sister-in-law and her husband, and they were nice enough to watch her long enough so that we could go check out the Timbers playing Atlanta United. And so that was a little easier experience, just not having a 16-month-old on our hip the whole time. But overall, it was a good trip. Went to the aquarium, tried to fit in a little educational experience there, and she ate that up. She loved seeing the fish. And the sea lions were her favorite part, I think. They were splashing around the window and stuff, so she really dug that.
I think I missed the Wiggles. I don't think I ever had to deal with that. That was not something Carly Ann watched or dealt with. And did I miss out, or is that one of the ones that could be used as a torture device along the way?
It's not. To be honest, it's not too bad. I mean, our house is all Wiggles all the time, 24/7. I mean, I wake up in the middle of night with the Wiggles. But outside of that, you know, I'll catch myself like humming at work, and then my coworkers will ask me what I'm humming. It's a Wiggle song. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, Wiggles aren't too bad. I mean, it could be worse. It could be Caillou, which is kind of a little whiny kid. So she's, but that's it. You know, that's that. And she kind of likes Rochester Hotel, which is like, I guess it's the characters from Sesame Street. And those are kind of her go-to things that we can kind of at least keep entertained for a little bit. No Teletubbies or anything like that just yet.
So, yeah. Well,
so far, so good.
You piqued my interest because I knew you were going to the Atlanta United game. You were wearing a Portland Timbers jersey, yeah. However. You for people who are not aware, which is 99.9%, you interned out in Portland while we were in college with the with the Beavers. Is it just a fascination from that, or did you actually have some dealings with the Timbers along the way?
Well, that was I interned for both of them.
Oh, was it? Okay.
They were – same stadium, and so their seasons kind of overlapped at that point. So, and I picked the best 3 months to live out in Portland because it, you know, obviously it has a reputation for raining all the time. But it was perfect. It was an awesome experience, and I guess that probably was 2007. And so I've kind of been a fan ever since. Here lately, I've kind of ramped up, I guess, my fandom, so to speak. You know, not having a regional team down here, and I'm. You know, most of my fandoms from St. Louis, that's where I'm from originally. They don't have a MLS team. They have a USL team. And obviously, if you've ever seen a Timbers game on TV, I got to say they're probably one of the more entertaining fan bases. I mean, they really get into it. And it's so I've always kind of kept tabs on them. And this summer was a good opportunity to get out and finally see him in person for the first time since I left Portland. And it also helps. They're actually a really good team. So that gives you something to pull for as well. But I've kind of kept up with them ever since. I know it's kind of an oddball. And, you know, it's funny, this weekend you could pick me and my wife out because we were, you know, maybe a handful of people wearing green. The rest of the stadium was decked out in red,
did
gold,
you,
and black.
Did you get her in a jersey too?
No, not a jersey.
Okay.
She was at least wearing a green shirt.
Okay.
But that was about as far as I could get her to go. Maybe next time around, we'll all have our matching kits. Maybe get Allie something too. So that was fun. You know, we took Marta. We stayed kind of out in the perimeter and took Marta in. You know, and I got to say, I didn't really know what to expect. Obviously, I've seen Atlanta games on TV. I know their fans are passionate for being, especially being a second-year team. But it was cool. It was like every stop, more and more Atlanta United kids, you know, people wearing their jerseys and stuff would get on Marta. And by the time we got down there, I mean, it was, you know, two specks of green and a sea of red. It was a good experience as a, you know, opposing fan. You know, I obviously went to high school in Atlanta. It was cool to kind of be in enemy territory, I guess, so to speak.
You're a good gauge for me because you've been a soccer fan for a long time. You keep pretty good tabs on it, but you're not also like the obsessive guy that like makes fun of anyone that doesn't like it or whatever. So I kind of go to you for my expertise is on what this is kind of like. I mean, as you said, you've been a fan of an MLS team for at least a decade. How surprised are you? Did you expect it to draw as well in Atlanta? I mean, when you first hear that it's coming into the Southeast and competing, even though not time of year, but competing with the big major sports in that area, what was sort of your expectation for MLS in this part of the country?
Well, you know, and I guess I have a little bit of a unique perspective because I actually interned for the Atlanta Silverbacks, which is a lower tier soccer team in Atlanta. I guess maybe my sophomore summer of college. And so I have a little bit of a unique perspective in that sense that, you know, we would be happy if we had a handful of fans, you know, maybe a couple hundred, I guess, maybe 1,000, you know, low, maybe 2,000 at the games. And they were really kind of pushing, obviously, try to grow the sport there. And obviously, with demographics and whatnot, you would think a city like Atlanta would be a popular city for soccer. And it was, you know, they drew well for their league, but it wasn't anything like you see now with Atlanta United. Now it also helps they were one of the best teams right out of the gate. You know, they invested well. You look at a team like Minnesota United, which is a slow burn compared to Atlanta United, which really kind of jumped in. And Joseph Martinez is one of the flashier, more exciting players in the league. And obviously being a big goal scorer, that helps attract fans. And just the whole experience. I mean, I couldn't be higher on the whole fan experience there, the kind of a fan fest thing outside before the game. It was cool. And it obviously, like I said, with them being successful out of the gate, that helps, especially in a city like Atlanta. Any Braves fan can tell you, their attendance, even when they were on their streak, wasn't always the best. And then obviously the Thrashers have relocated. So you'd think maybe kind of non-traditional sports in that area, but they were great. I mean, it was packed. I was kind of curious. We showed up maybe 90 minutes early and 15 minutes before kickoff. I was kind of looking around and a bunch of empty seats on the sides. I'm thinking, what the heck? And then right about the time they started doing player introductions, it filled up in a hurry. And they announced 45,000 plus as the attendance. And it was a loud game day experience. It was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it right here. And Atlanta leads attendance in the MLS by basically 10,000 over Seattle. Toronto's 3, LA's 4, Orlando City is 5. The Timbers, as you mentioned, are at 9. And that's for average. 48,036 for Atlanta United. It's still new. They're good. You mentioned those things.
Right.
But where do you think, is it just that they're being, it's another sport being added where the same fans? Do you think they are, you know, I guess my point is, where are they attracting these fans from? Is it just soccer fans? Is it just Atlanta fans that also would be going to Braves games and other things? Like, how has it kind of come together for them?
Yeah, I think they've done a good job in a number of ways. Obviously, like I said, with them being good out of the gate, that was a big boost. You know, I think soccer it's kind of a trendy sport, as weird as maybe that kind of sounds. You know, we've been hearing for probably decades that it's an up-and-coming sport. Everybody plays soccer, blah, 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 blah. But I think you're saying it's becoming more and more popular with folks our age and probably younger. So maybe, you know, kind of a millennial. I don't know if it's like a hipster sport kind of thing. I know that when I looked around at our seats, most of the people right around me were probably our age or younger. And it was ironic. A woman two rows up, obviously I was about the only one in our section wearing green. She came running up to me. She probably 60s. Oh, hey, she just had to introduce herself that they were Portland season ticket owners for 8 years. And they drove in from Lexington to see the game. And for whatever reason, she was wearing a red shirt. And about halftime, she came up and she said, I just can't stand Atlanta United. I'm a Timbers fan at heart. And anyway, I kind of got a kick out of that. Obviously, she was trying to bond with, I guess, anyone wearing green in our section. But, you know, I think they've just done a good job. Like I said, Joseph Martinez, you know, being an exciting player, goal scorer, Almiron. I mean, they've done a good job of targeting the right kind of players, young, exciting, energetic players that I think really kind of dive into maybe some underserved areas in Atlanta as far as trying to get fans to come out. And it was I'll be honest, it was a really diverse crowd right around me. A lot of folks were speaking Spanish. You know, obviously they're, you know, my wife and I, you know, English is our first language, but I mean, I think they've tapped into a number of different areas. The big stadium probably doesn't hurt. I think it's a pretty convenient way to get to the games too, in the sense that Marta drops you off like right in front of the stadium. And like I said, we were on Marta, maybe we were one of the furthest out stops, and it was you know, a 30-minute ride, but each stop, I mean, just more and more fans. So I think they've done, to be honest, I think they've done a lot of things right. I think it was kind of perfect timing for them to get into the league when they did.
Well, I'll ask you the unanswerable question then, because the World Cup's going on, and it seems like every time there's a World Cup, we go, well, hey, this is the one that's going to do this and help soccer in America. But the United States is not in the World Cup. There's still a lot of people around, still watching it, still popular, but, you know, it's not as much as the people that, you know, like myself, who go, well, let's go to the bar just because America's playing, and we'll cheer for them for 2 hours, and we'll forget it and move on with our day. I mean, this is interesting, though, from an MLS standpoint. You've got Nashville trying to really get involved in what they're doing. Is this finally the time where – look, I mean, let's not go crazy. I'm not saying it's replacing football or baseball or basketball or anything else, but is it the time where it at least gets into the more mainstream sports conversation in America?
Yeah, I think so, and especially, you know, with, like I said, it seems to be quite popular with folks our age, and our people our age are having kids, and so they're – you know, they're playing soccer, and obviously I know my dad got into hockey because I played hockey for the most part. You know, so I think that's part of it where you look moving forward, you know, where they're going to host the World Cup here. So you're going to have a lot of momentum kind of building towards that. What is it? 2026, I guess. They're kind of moving forward. I think MLS is taking some big steps here, really, in the last 4 years, I guess. You know, obviously it has that reputation of being a retirement league. And, you know, when you hear rumors about, like, Wayne Rooney and Zlatan coming over, you say, okay, you know, maybe things haven't changed. But then you see teams like Atlanta United that go and spend money in Central and South America, and that's, you know, to bring in young, exciting players that they know if they play well, maybe that's an avenue to get to Europe. I think that's probably a sales pitch they're getting for a lot of these guys. You know, the Timbers have done well in, like, Argentina, for example, and some other areas. I think that's kind of a sales pitch. Hey, come play well in MLS, and you can probably cash in Europe, in England or Spain or, you know, wherever. Germany seems to be picking up a lot of Americans lately. So I think there's a number of different things that this is kind of the perfect timing for MLS. And I think they understand, you know, like I said, with it kind of being a trendy sport moving forward with people our age, I think they're kind of doing things right. Obviously, the way the internet's working now and streaming, and it's easier now to watch games than ever. You know, you don't need a league pass or whatever to watch the games. I have ESPN Plus, which I guess is like $4.99 a month, and I can watch pretty much any MLS game I want on my phone or, you know, tablet or whatever the case might be.
Help out the person kind of like myself who knows nothing about them. With the U.S. not making the World Cup, you know, you've heard a lot about things getting better at lower levels and the younger players that they're developing through the system and the system overall. How poised are they potentially to maximize what is possible since they're hosting in 2026? I mean, it's obviously 8 years away, but I mean, is there a trajectory that could make it where that could be another launch point, another jumping off point for a positive soccer experience in this country?
Well, I think it's interesting, at least, that you know some of the best players this time around this cycle that you know we're now in the World Cup for this for that past cycle, but. You know, some of the best Americans were the younger guys like Pulisic, you know, who are obviously going to have a role. They're going to be a face in the, not the franchise, but kind of the program moving forward, the U.S. Women's Team. And you kind of saw a glimpse of maybe what the future holds here in some of the friendlies that they played leading up to the World Cup. You know, I believe they drew against France, and obviously France started making subs, you know, make sure keep guys healthy for the World Cup. So, you know, who knows what happens if they are playing to actually win the game. But you see some here with these young guys coming forward, whether it's Josh Sargent, Tim Weah, you know, and there's a number of other guys. I mean, you can see where, at least in my opinion, it seems like we're doing a better job of developing some of these special talent, these special types. You know, I think the U.S. has always kind of had that reputation of being kind of a gritty team to play against where – you don't necessarily have the high-end skill outside of maybe, you know, the Landon Donovan's or those kind of guys, but, you know, they're going to try to counter you to death and kind of wear you down and then spring a guy and try to break a goal. You know, I'm starting to see, they wanted to do that, but Ernie Stewart was just named the GM and I don't think they've named a coach yet. So we'll see what kind of style they want to play moving forward. But it seems to be at least on the lower levels, there's exciting young kids, and a lot of them are going over to Europe, especially Germany, and kind of playing against the best of the best. And I, in my opinion, that can do nothing but help the national program.
What was your personal take on the Landon Donovan ad supporting Mexico?
You know, teach their own, I guess. And obviously, you know, who was it? Wells Fargo. You know, they're paying him to be a spokesperson for their brand or whatever, but. I don't know. And obviously, I think maybe one of his parents is from Mexico, so I kind of get it. Just kind of bold when obviously soccer fans across the country are kind of stabbed in the heart that they didn't qualify. And then, you know, the guy who's tied atop the scoring leaderboard for him, he's pulling for Mexico. And to be honest, I like the Mexican team. They're fun. They're exciting to watch. They're kind of, you know, like I've been saying, energetic. They play a fun brand of football to watch as a spectator, so I get it. You know, I'd like to see them do well, but, you know, when you see the player from the men's program, I don't know. It was an interesting choice, I guess, to put it lightly, and I think even some of his teammates have kind of, obviously, social media what it is. You know, it didn't take long for the storm to kind of to build up around him.
Did you get heckled at all, or was it a pretty mild crowd?
Well, no, you know, so like I mentioned, the one woman came up and was kind of chatting me up about being a former Timbers season ticket holder. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, everybody was pretty good. Jamie and I laughed when we were walking back after the game, walking to MARTA. I didn't get heckled or anything. You know, it's not – I didn't – fear for our safety or anything. It wasn't anything extreme like that. But the Timbers, one of their kits, I think up until maybe 2 years ago, was red, was their kind of alternate kit, which is Rose City Red, I guess. And we passed a guy, you know, we'd see every now and then you'd see a Timbers fan, you got high five, yeah, you know, fist bump, whatever. You know, because obviously it's like just a handful of us and everybody else wearing red. Well, I passed one Timbers fan and he gave me a high five, and then it kind of clicked. I was like, wait, he was wearing red. So he was trying to like play both sides. He's wearing the red kit, trying to match in with Atlanta United fans. Like, you know, if you're going to pull for the Timbers, you got to at least wear green. It was cool because, like I said, we got there so early that the Timbers Army went up, well, you know, waving their flags and everything. If you'd watch the game, or like I said, one of the better fan support groups in the league. So it was a good experience. Like I said, the only thing, and I don't know, it's probably like this in any, with any sport, any fans, you know, obviously having spent most of my time in the last decade in press boxes, you know, you don't get the full fan experience all the time, but I did have the one guy in front of me who every time somebody went down, oh, red card, ref, red, give him the red. I had to do everything in my power just to not like say something. At one point, Jamie was like, hey, you know, just calm down. It's okay. It's just, you know, the one fan who wants every call to go their way, even though, as we know, soccer has some tendencies for embellishment, I guess, so to speak, especially certain players.
It's probably the soccer version of in baseball. Every time there's like a pickoff, yeah, and everybody yells balk every time.
yeah, that, or you know the guys who are, you know, it's clear the pitch is outside. Oh, come on, that was a strike. You know, whatever the case might be. I mean, it was like every time a guy went down, and I don't know if he's just a new fan, if he bought the jersey because it looked cool and his friends are, you know, soccer guys, and he's maybe, I don't know, just getting into it, but there are a couple, you know, where the guy doesn't, you know, he's yelling for like a run, the guy doesn't even get a warning, like it's play on or, you know, advantage or whatever, and it's like, okay, just calm, you know, calm down a little bit, read the rule book.
They're new fans, you gotta cut, you gotta give them a break, they've had a team for like 2 years.
That is true, you know, it's only been 2 years, so, you know, obviously it's funny because, you know, obviously everybody has like brand new jerseys, you know, other fan bases. You know, obviously you can sometimes tell like the true fans, like the Cub fans who've been through the heartache, and then the Cub fans who maybe just jumped on the bandwagon here in the last two or three years, you know, with their new jerseys and hats and stuff. Well, obviously everybody in Atlanta has new, new kits because they didn't exist 3 years ago.
Yeah, so, it's the fan trying to understand I mean, soccer, kind of like when you and I went to a Stars game in Dallas, and the first time that we had really good seats, kind of like right behind the net. The first time I heard in warm-ups the puck hitting the boards, and I felt like I'd gotten shot. Like I thought that the entire place was getting bombed at the moment.
Yeah. And, well, that, and obviously the Stars fans yelling Stars and national anthem stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, fans in Atlanta yell Knights because that used to be the hockey team before the Thrashers.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, it's those little things you kind of pick up on. But, you know, overall, it was a good experience. And like I've mentioned, riding MARTA, I mean, it really was cool to look around and see how much support they're gaining. I mean, the trains were maybe like 85% folks going to the ball game, going to the game. It was cool. And people having conversations about soccer. I was trying not to eavesdrop too much, but the person behind me that was streaming an MLS game on their phone, you know, with the volume up, which, you know, I guess is maybe, you know, probably shouldn't do that, MARTA, but, you know, with everybody else around within earshot. But, you know, it seems like they're really kind of, you know, making Atlanta United their own. And it'll be fun to see kind of where they go moving forward here. I think at least the league looks like it's taking some steps forward here. So I'm excited. As a, you know, I'm not quite a diehard fan, but I'm a, you know, obviously, I drove to Atlanta to see him play, so you know, I'm invested, and it's good to see the league in a city like Atlanta. And I think Nashville is going to be a great team. It sounds like they're making some good hires, so I'm excited to see what they do with the team.
Yeah, I'm interested, if nothing else, in the evolution of the sport as Nashville gets it and Atlanta. You know, once the new wears off and it keeps going. But anyway, appreciate it. Enjoy the Wiggles when Allie wakes up, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, see you later. Bye.
Thanks to Patrick for joining us this morning. The podcast is also brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. 662-607-7773 is the phone number. MasterCutsLawn.com. Sign an annual contract. Tell me you heard about it on the podcast. They'll hook you up with some different specials they have going, yard aeration, landscaping, even building different things for you to enjoy your lawn and outdoor living areas. They build outdoor kitchens and more. Again, 662-607-7773.
Patrick Oakes and all other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Let Billy's Pecans handle your corporate gifting. You will thank yourself and thank us and thank Billy's Pecans for the idea. Whether it's 5 to 5,000 orders, Billy's Pecans will handle it with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style, with items at every price point you simply can't choose wrong. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans and More, and it couldn't be any more satisfying. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Ask about the lease deals. If you drive, say, less than 15,000 miles a year, might be something you ought to look into. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
So I guess probably already in or is about to Gray Kessinger's surgery today on both thumbs, actually. It was not something I was aware of until sometime yesterday. He had that collision in the Cape League last week, the only game that he played. In the seventh inning of the game, he collided up the middle, as we told you at the time, with Bourne shortstop Anthony Prado. And I guess he tried to brace himself right before they hit with both hands, and it apparently the left thumb, as we mentioned, is much worse on the glove hand. I think it might even need a plate or a screw or something in it today. However, the other one also has some sort of small fracture in it, so surgery on both thumbs for Gray Kessinger this morning in Jackson. My assumption is Dr. Geisler is doing that, but I don't have that confirmed. 6 to 8 weeks is a rough recovery timeline. That's not for sure. They'll have to kind of go in there, see what they see during the operation. I'll bring an update to you if I get it. And prognosis is good. Should be fine. But both thumbs, that's going to be a little bit of a difficulty just, frankly, with everyday life for 6 to 8 weeks there, because I can't imagine not having either thumb to go about my day.
Yeah, there's there's a lot there that –
I was being more practical than you, but yes, that's...
No, well, I was thinking practical things as well that I really don't want to discuss on the...
No, I know. I've had that conversation with a couple of different people, and they're like, you know, that would really suck. I'm like, yes, that would really suck.
Yeah, I was thinking yesterday, what all do you use your thumbs for just in everyday life? Basically everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason, you know, us and the monkeys, there's the thumbs about the difference, so... Now we're going to have an evolution thread, which I'm not really in the mood for. But anyway, yeah, I mean, look, it's good news because I saw a picture of his thumb the night it happened. It did not look good, and I was worried there was severe ligament damage, something much worse than just a bone, because if you're given the choices, you'd much rather have a bone injury most of the time rather than some tendon or ligament issue. So,
oh, for sure.
You know, 6 to 8 weeks, good timeline. I mean, it's going to be a bit of a pain, but it'll be all right.
Yeah, so. It'll be okay. Just probably not the way he wanted to spend his summer.
No, when you've, you know, two summers in a row, thought you were going to go to the Cape League and have a good time and do the whole thing in up there, and now you've played six innings in 2 years with two surgeries and three broken bones. That's quite the bad break, no pun intended. So, anyway, Gray Kessinger out 6 to 8 weeks. Again, surgery this morning in Jackson. Both thumbs for that. As we will use this as some content today, Sports Illustrated coming out with their top 100 college football players for the 2018 season. That is filler, but it's filler that I'll approve. And if it helps me out, I'm okay with it. So we'll take a look at today.
Less filler than what all the major national people are doing today with the James Harden winning the MVP award, turning it into a what if, and just completely disregarding the truth in that story. It just blows me away. It's not even a Thunder thing. It's just a journalism thing.
Does it really blow you away?
No, I used the wrong term. It bothers the out of me.
Yeah, no, I know.
But I'm learning, man, and I'm probably about to experience it today at this convention. I'm one of the last of the people who believe in Big J journalism.
Yeah, I don't expect you to have a great day today. I'll just be honest.
I expect to be really frustrated.
SI got cute, put a kicker at number 100, Rodrigo Blankenship, the kicker at Georgia, the guy that wears the goggles.
He'll probably have some big kicks.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I'm just going to run down the list for anybody that I actually know or that matters. Number 96, interesting one here, not Ole Miss related, but Ugo Amadi, the defensive back from Michigan that signed with Oregon. He makes the list at number 100. I know Ole Miss went after him pretty hard there for a while.
Long time.
Was he committed to Ole Miss too at once?
Maybe so. I can't remember. He flirted with it.
Quarterback at Washington, Jake Browning, all the way down at number 92. Seems kind of low for him, honestly. 91, Isaiah Buggs, defensive lineman in Alabama that Ole Miss went after hard.
He's from Ruston.
He is from Ruston. That's right.
Yep.
Forgot about that. Tied in at Missouri is 85. Tua Tagovailoa is number 84, quarterback for Alabama.
Way too low. Way too low.
Number 83, quarterback at Auburn, Jarrett Stidham.
It's too low for him.
83 and 84 there for the two Alabama quarterbacks. Number 80, quarterback, University of Michigan, Shea Patterson.
I'd argue that's too low for him.
Number 77, defensive end, Jeffrey Simmons, Mississippi State University.
Okay. He'll be a lot higher. He's going to be the fascinating one in April.
Yeah, what do they do considering all of his extracurriculars?
Because he's a stud. I mean, he's a pure football standpoint. He is a great player.
During the little paragraph here discussing Simmons, that is his how they close, it says, with luck, he could parlay a gaudy junior season stat line into a first-round pick in the 2019 draft, hyphen, if some NFL team makes peace with the simple assault arrest and video of him striking a woman that nearly ended his college career before it started.
That video is going to be – look, in Mississippi where there was tons of propaganda and everybody's had to kind of sweep it under the rug, that's one thing because everybody's a damn fan in the media. In Kansas City or Chicago or Milwaukee or Las Vegas, I mean, you pick an NFL market, Miami – that video is going to be met with protest.
Yeah, it will have not to that level. And again, it's football, not baseball. But whatever the tier is below the things that Luke Heimlich is dealing with.
Yeah.
One tier below in a sport that's a little more forgiving.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, man, it's going to be really interesting. He's going to get drafted, and he's probably going to get drafted. Internal meetings during the spring leading up to the draft. There, every one of those NFL teams, for the most part, is going to have a hand raised guy in that room that says, is this really worth it?
Yeah. One spot above Jeffrey Simmons, number 76, quarterback, Ole Miss, Jordan Tamu.
That's probably about right.
Number 75, linebacker, LSU, Devin White. One spot again, three SEC guys in a row there. I think Devin White's a little low. They were very complimentary of Tamu. They're expecting a huge year from him, actually. Running back Damian Harris at Alabama, number 70. A little low for a Bama running back. T. Higgins and his new car at 69, wide receiver at Clemson.
Look at you.
Yeah. Look, is this too high to be my crush? I'm struggling here because, you know, this was the front runner just because of the profile. But Benny Snell – at number 66, that's a little too high for my crush, isn't it?
Chase, I can't make you love someone.
Okay, that's a little too high.
Love is something that happens. You don't make yourself.
Yeah, I feel front running there. Just a little too high.
I don't know that Benny Snell is. I don't know that jumping on the Benny Snell bandwagon makes you a front runner. If you jumped on the Tua Tagovailoa.
Well, Benny Snell is ranked higher than Damian Harris and Tua Tagovailoa.
And the Tua thing, I mean, I don't know what they're – are they ranking 1 to 100 in terms of here how good the players are, or here's how's going to be impactful?
Impact to the team season.
Tua at 84 is stupid.
Yeah, it's impact to team season. They point that out a couple times.
Tua should be top five.
Jake Fromm, quarterback at Georgia, 65.
Over. Who?
Jake Fromm, 65, Georgia. What do you think?
I lost you there for a minute. You're going to repeat that.
Sorry, Jake Fromm, 65, Georgia.
Too low.
Okay. Trey Smith is a great offensive tackle. He's at 59. That's too low, too. Let's see. Scrolling on down. I may have to go to the top because I think that cuts off at 50. Dylan Moses at 51 for Alabama, the guy that – for years was the number one prospect in the country and then all of a sudden fell off a cliff because he didn't have a position.
You know how, and this will probably come up today, how I get upset about ranking eighth graders.
Yeah.
Dylan Moses is my poster child. Because if Dylan Moses hadn't had that silly ranking stuff put on him in junior high school by our organization and others, people would not view him already as almost this disappointment. Because he peaked a little early, no one gives him credit for still being a really good football player. Instead, it's, boy, we all thought he was going to be a superstar. Well, he was in junior high school.
Well, and it was that deal where no matter what you did with it, he never had a position. You know what I mean? Like, his position changed every year, but everyone just kept flaunting him at whatever was going on instead of understanding, well, okay, eventually when this guy quits growing, where are we putting him?
Right, and we'll figure it out once he stops growing. Let's take all the, let's not put this pressure on the kid. It's one thing, and people say, well, then don't go to the camps. But maybe he went to the camps to learn. It's one of the things that I don't think I'll get the opportunity today because I think people will tell me to shut up. I would raise my hand and say, can we stop ranking ninth graders? And the argument would be, well, the colleges are offering them. Okay. But they're not really offering them, Chase. There's not a written offer.
Did you see that thing came across on the basketball deal the other day where they had like the top team for the 2028 class or something?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. You didn't see my sarcastic tweet about it?
No, I don't guess. Sorry.
The little boy in my neighborhood, I think he's like 3.
Uh-huh.
He's got a big wheel kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's ranked number 7 in the country among 3-year-olds for big wheel riding.
Oh, gotcha.
It's the same damn thing. It's a joke, man. I mean, why are we doing this? Why is it? It's the adults that feel compelled to do this, not the kids. Do we really need to rank 5th grade AAU basketball team? Do we really need to rank them? Why? It's so stupid. It drives me crazy. And the argument that you'll get from organizations like the one that I work for is, well, the colleges are recruiting them. Pick a school. Let's pick a non-SEC school so we don't get anybody work. Illinois.
All right.
Illinois. University of Illinois offers an 8th grader.
Uh-huh.
Is the offer any good? Is the offer really any good?
Well, it's not even technically an offer because you have to be a certain age to get an offer.
Well, we report offers.
I know.
We report offers, Chase.
I know. I'm just telling you the kid is not getting a piece of paper with an offer on it.
So he's not getting anything that has any tangible value?
Well, no.
So why the hell are we reporting it? Drives me crazy. It's my pet peeve. I hate it. I hate the early ranking thing. I don't think it's fair to the kids. I don't like it. And I know I'm being old man on the lawn, but reporting a quote offer of a 7th grade quarterback, and you see that every day, is just, it's weak journalism.
Number 47 on the list, the guy who became a meme for a day yesterday, Ole Miss wide receiver DK Metcalf.
That dude.
Ole Miss might need a defensive end that looks like him.
Well, there's no might to it.
Like, he dwarfed A.J. Brown and all those dudes in that picture yesterday. He looks like an action figure.
He does. He looks like a cartoon figure. Like, we went to see the what's the movie that's out right now?
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles. He looked like one of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you give him a cape and a mask and just a bodysuit, I promise you he looks like one of the Incredibles.
You know, a lot of guys get a little timid in that room. He's not going to stay, so it's not going to matter. He would not be timid at the Senior Bowl getting undressed for the scouts.
Oh, no, no. He'll get to do it in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
No, he'll be the one when they say, can you strip down to your underwear? Sure.
Yeah.
Be happy to.
Oh,
can you imagine that feeling? I've never felt that way in my life.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like, you know, like he even wore the little short shorts to, you know, show off the thighs and the glutes a little bit yesterday.
I've told you, if I ever had a body like that, I'm just going naked.
Yeah. Well, I was a little disappointed in him. It's like, did you have to put the, you know, like whatever. But like, if it was me, you know, do you have to wear the Manning Passing Academy shirt? Could you not go shirtless?
If I ever have a body like that, man, yeah. I'm not wearing shirts.
Yeah.
I'll just get cold. I'm walking around shirtless.
Yeah.
So, everywhere.
DK at 47, a lot of people buying a lot of stock in that young man. Number 45.
In all seriousness for a minute, yeah. On DK, is he putting himself in a position, not at the college level, at the pro level, where someone could take a look at him at almost one of these tight end sort of hybrid inside receiver positions where he's almost impossible to guard?
Yeah, he's physical. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Because the knock on him is that he doesn't have the burner speed.
Yeah, he doesn't have the separation at the elite level.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, look, maximize your body, get as fast as you can, and see where they put you. Somebody's going to draft that dude real high and figure it out.
I'm going to tell you what, man. There's some 5'11", 185-pound cornerback who saw that picture yesterday and went, no.
Yeah, no thanks.
Tackling that in the open field? No thank you.
Yeah, two spots above him, number 45, Ole Miss offensive tackle Greg Little.
That's probably about right for this list. Greg's going early in the NFL draft.
Yeah, the paragraph basically says that. It says Jordan Tamu can beat defenses with his feet, but Ole Miss's high-flying passing attack won't reach his full potential. If the line leaves him running for his life on every play, Little arrived 2 years ago as the number 3 overall recruit in the country, behind only Rashawn Gary and Dexter Lawrence, and he's likely to fall into Laramie Tunzel's path to the top of mock drafts everywhere by neutralizing the SEC's best edge rushers.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess he doesn't have video problems.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know of Greg, he's
in line to be really, really well regarded here in a few months.
He could be a top 5 pick.
Nick Fitzgerald, quarterback, Mississippi State at number 41.
In terms of impactful,
probably low from an impact standpoint because they fall off a cliff without him.
Yeah, they fall off a cliff without him. Their schedule is very winnable. If he's good and they're good and defensively they should be really good, their schedule is very – their schedule can be tackled.
Number 36, running back Florida State, Cam Akers.
Someone wrote a column once that said that was the most egregious Ole Miss recruiting loss since Peyton Manning. Took a lot of heat for it.
Stand by it. Right.
Someone was right. Put Cam Akers on this team.
Oh.
Put Cam Akers on this team. Change nothing else. Put Cam Akers on this team.
It's the undisputed best offense in the country.
Best offense in the country. Put Cam Akers. Change nothing on this team, but put Cam Akers at running back, and I'll buy 8-4. Because I have people all the time going, this team's going to win 8 games, and I say, no, it's not. And they say, why do you say that? Because they can't stop anybody. And I'm not positive that on 3rd and 1.5, they can get that yard. If you put Cam Akers back there.
Behind a pretty dang good offensive line.
It's a really good offensive line.
Yeah.
It's veteran. It's good.
Got a star, obviously.
Got a star, but they're good inside. Sean Rawlings is an underrated player. They're Javon Patterson's a very solid player. They're good. They're good all over. Veterans, they've played a lot of SEC football, and up front, I think that's important. But they don't have that bell cow back there, and maybe it ends up being Scotty Phillips. He had some flashes in the spring. I'm not saying it won't be, but if Cam Akers were on this team, we're having different conversations. That's why when people just give free passes to some of the people who were at Ole Miss before, I got a feeling 10 years from now, people are saying the same things about that I said about Ole Miss's situation when they let their program get in the shape that it did with Peyton Manning in high school.
Three spots above that, number 33, we mentioned him yesterday, quarterback Missouri, Drew Locke, 33.
That's probably too low.
Especially for what we're talking about. I mean, Missouri is terrible without him.
Yeah, and with him, they have as good a chance as anybody else of being the second best team in the East.
Yeah, the winner is decided, but everything else is pretty humdrum over there. So, all right.
Yeah, Georgia's the best team, and they're going to win.
Yeah. Raekwon Davis and that academic miracle at number 28 for Alabama, the defensive lineman.
He studied, Chase.
Studied, yes. Worked hard, little summer school, all good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
see. I mean, I'm going to tell you, I live in a house
mm-hmm.
with high schoolers. I mean, people make massive ACT jumps all the time if you just study.
Oh, gosh. Number 22, quarterback Will Greer, West Virginia. You buying or selling?
Let me go back on that for a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back on that. As the parent of a high schooler,
yeah,
who you see the importance of the ACT, that Raekwon Davis thing is fraudulent. The stuff that we underreport, that we underinvestigate, that we just sweep under the rug, that's what cheapens what we do. And it also, the fact that he's – I should stop. That's the part that cheapens the whole deal. When people like me look at it and go, I don't know. Buy or sell on Will Greer?
Yeah.
I mean, he's important for that team. I don't know that team's doing anything one way or the other than what they always do.
I mean, the Big 12's pretty bad. If he's really good, couldn't they bolster up into that top two or three?
I guess so. So, yeah, he's a good player. Greer's a good player.
One spot above him, as previously mentioned, Ole Miss wide receiver A.J. Brown at 21.
He's a great player. Going to be a first-round pick.
Feel pretty good about that, don't you?
Yes. I mean, barring an injury or something.
You know, that was the thing yesterday, and this is not in any realm criticism to A.J., but that's the thing about that picture. D.K. made A.J. look small.
He did. But AJ's going to get to do things on the field that most people can't do.
Yeah, including DK.
He's a better Laquon Treadwell.
Yeah, in space, he is just something else.
We get separation. He's impossible to bring down.
He's one big muscle.
He's just a dynamic player. He's a first-round pick. Ole Miss could have two top 10 picks.
Yeah, I mean, he's... DK, I mean, AJ is that guy that might leave, even without the team success while he's here, one of those all-time fan legend kind of guys.
Sure.
That Mount Rushmore of just fan favorites with everything that's going on.
Sure.
Real no close to that, honestly. The top 10, just for curiosity, I don't think it has as much relevance to the conversation, but Dexter Lawrence, Clemson, number 10. Rashawn Gary, Michigan, number 9. Jaquan Johnson, defensive back, Miami, number 8. Clelin Ferrell, defensive end, Clemson, number 7. Jonathan Taylor, running back, Wisconsin, number 6. Nick Bosa, defensive end, Ohio State, number 5. Khalil Tate, quarterback, Arizona, number 4. Christian Wilkins, defensive end, Clemson, number 3. That's three Clemson players in the top 10.
Defensive linemen, right?
Yeah, I think so. Bryce Love, running back, Stanford, number 2. And then number 1, Ed Oliver, defensive tackle, Houston.
Wow.
That's
people talking about Oliver being a first overall pick.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. He was a 5-star out of high school. Ole Miss was in on him a little bit.
You listen to the top of that, and I criticized rivals earlier. I feel compelled to say, not because I need to protect myself, because I don't, but they also get a lot right.
Yeah, pretty good list from a recruiting ranking standpoint there at the end.
Got it right on guys like Dexter Lawrence and
Rashawn Gary,
Ed Oliver, Rashawn Gary, and Greg Little.
A.J. Brown.
A.J., yeah, for sure. If anything, A.J. was underrated.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that.
He should have been a 5-star, and there were a couple people who fought for that 5th-star.
Mm-hmm. As we finish that list up, I'll tell you the podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website. Also have a great app, and they're located there in Holly Springs. Give them a call, 662-252-2321. Fill out a form, give your doctor's name. They'll get the prescription ready and available to you. They deliver wherever you are. And they're also now in Oxford, G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. Go in, let them help you out. Great hometown service that delivers local in the Oxford area.
And the podcast is brought to you by Lauren Valick Ferris of Briggs Freeman Sotheby's in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Lauren is a rebel by marriage. She specializes in East Dallas, has a network that extends throughout the Metroplex. She loves cheering on the Rebs, and she would love to help Rebel fans in Dallas or moving to Dallas sell their home or find and buy their new one. She is consistently ranked as a top agent producer in D Magazine. She was recently named a 2017 Advocate Top 10 Realtor in the Lakewood East Dallas area. So whether you're moving home, buying, selling, or referring a friend in one of the hottest housing and job markets in the country, you need a realtor who knows the town. That's Lauren. Go to her site, laurenandkelly.com. Ford.com or call her 469-867-1734. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or search for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. You should know that Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a great one when you get Robert Gambrell. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800.
Even the Oxford Police Department's pushing soccer. I say they're using 40-inch soccer balls for their horses on Twitter.
Do what?
The Oxford Police Department is doing sensory training with their horses, and it's big 40-inch soccer balls. The horses are, like, batting around with their noses and hooves or whatever.
Oh.
Yeah, you didn't see that?
I did not.
Yeah, well, look what you missed out. You've been traveling, but on the road, another week.
Yeah, I know.
Do you get really tired on the road? Or do you kind of handle it pretty well?
I handle the road okay, because I'm such a loner anyway that I handle the road fine.
Probably too well, if you want to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, it just didn't faze me at all. And then I look forward to getting home, I guess. But the road doesn't faze me the way I hear other people go, oh, I just can't, whatever. I'm kind of okay. I'm just, that's where my complete lack of social needs, I guess, kicks in.
So, hold on a second. I know nothing about the NBA. The guy that won the Coach of the Year was fired?
Yes, Dwayne Casey.
Okay.
Now, he has since been hired.
Okay. Who hired him?
I think Milwaukee hired him.
Okay. So, he was fired in a year where he was named the best coach in the league.
He was fired in a year. I know this will shock you as someone who covers sports. This actually will ring really close to home to what you cover. He was fired because the Raptors had a great season, got the one seed, and then Cleveland swept them out of the postseason.
Okay.
Had a bad series.
Yeah.
And they said, had a bad series again.
Okay.
They've had a run of not being able to get past Cleveland the last few years. I don't know if you're aware of this. Cleveland has a player by the name of James on their team.
Why does he not just win the MVP every year?
Because voters do what voters have done for a long, long time, and that's get cute.
Okay.
LeBron James played all 82 games this year.
He's the best player.
Well, not only is he the best player, but this season he was the most valuable player. If you take LeBron James off the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're a lottery team. They're in the lottery, Chase. The lottery.
And there are seriously,
games.
And there are what? There are 8 to 10 teams you could put them on and they would win the title?
In a normal sports world, yes. I don't know that right now. That's why it's funny.
No, okay. You put them on the Rockets, they win. They beat the Warriors. Come on.
Ooh.
Come on.
Well, this year, yes.
Yeah, this year. That's all I care about.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Squeezing that salary into that. You'd have to.
I don't care about that. I just mean personnel.
Okay, so disregard the money.
Yeah, yes. I don't care about that. I just mean people. I mean, you literally just hand LeBron a jersey to so many teams, they would win the thing.
Yes. They would win. If you put him in Houston, they would have won. I would argue if you put him in Oklahoma City, they would have won.
Toronto.
I would argue if you put him in Utah, they might have won.
Boston for sure.
Philly, say. He would have changed the Raptors in ways that are difficult. Maybe they would have won. Yes, he's the best player in the league. He was, and this year he was the most valuable player. Last year when Westbrook won, he missed a lot of games, and Kyrie carried the Cavaliers, and Russell Westbrook took a team that would have been early in the lottery and made them a playoff team. So I got it a year ago. And look, Harden had a great season. He had a great season. And I have no problem with James Harden winning the MVP award. And the whole narrative about the Thunder, the thing that drives me crazy is this. James Harden did not want to be the third or even second banana in Oklahoma City. He wanted to be he wanted as soon as possible to be the marquee name on a team. He wanted to be able to put himself in position, and I don't blame him a bit, to get the max deal, to get the max exposure. He did not want to be in Kevin Durant's shadow, in Russell Westbrook's shadow, and he certainly didn't want to be in both of their shadows. And he had just come off NBA finals that he was bad, frankly, and he made the Olympic team, and he didn't play much on that team. Durant was emerging as an absolute superstar. He wanted to go be his own guy, and that's the part of that narrative that so many lazy ones in the media just won't acknowledge. It wasn't as simple as the Thunder wouldn't pay him. The Thunder did try to pay him.
Yeah.
So LeBron, what I was going to say, what's interesting is that LeBron is what's today, the 26th?
Yep.
So we're 4 or 5 days away from the start of NBA free agency. And the league is kind of waiting to see what LeBron does. I would argue it doesn't matter. I don't think there's any place he can go that takes the title away from the Warriors next year.
Who can afford him that could compete with them? Where could he go?
Houston could do it, but it would probably cost them Clint Capella.
Okay.
And Capella's young and really, really good.
I know he's not going there, but could Boston do it?
They would have to move a lot of pieces.
Okay, so no.
And they're not going to do it. Yeah, Philly could do it. Philly has the money to do it.
You don't think Gordon Hayward makes them a contender for against the Warriors next year?
A contender? No, not really.
Okay, fair enough.
It'd be competitive.
Okay.
But no. I don't think Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving make them a competitor.
Okay.
I mean, not a legitimate contender. They might win the East, and they might win a finals game. They might even win two finals games, but they're not winning the finals.
Okay.
I mean, LeBron could go to Philly. The problem is Simmons, Embiid, Fultz, those guys.
That's a lot for one ball.
Well, and those guys, their best basketball is probably a couple of years away. And so if you're Philly, do you mess with the process? After you've invested so much into the process.
Yeah.
And if you're LeBron, is that the gamble you take?
Yeah.
See, I think this comes down to LeBron. It comes down to two things. He'll go to L.A. if and only if L.A. can get Kawhi Leonard and either Paul George or Chris Paul. And if he can't pull that off, I think he's going to stay in Cleveland, where Cleveland will at least do everything it possibly can and pay whatever taxes has to be incurred to get his kind of players around him. For example, the Thunder and Carmelo Anthony could reach a buyout agreement, and then Carmelo could play in Cleveland with LeBron. That kind of thing. I think that's more likely than him going to Boston or Philly or Houston or whatever.
Okay. All right. Well, have fun at your day today at a table.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
Are you?
Yes.
Okay. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. I don't know who we'll talk to or what we'll do, but we'll do something. And we'll be here waiting on you whenever you get ready to hit the download button. Appreciate you as always. Thanks to Patrick Oakes for his time. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.